Hello, Oasis.
Hey, what up? Welcome back.
We have another episode for you. Join with Brennan and Ben. And
someone's going to be like, they're wearing the same clothes.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
Back-to-back recordings because we're just crushing it on this Tuesday. Happy April 2nd. It's April 9th for you guys.
Yeah, you're throwing out.
Yesterday we had a leadership meeting, and we typically don't have them on Mondays of 3-day weekends, right? So it was Easter, and so it was Monday, April 1st. And I said, hey, just remember, we have a leadership meeting. And then 15 minutes before the meeting, one of the leaders texted me and said, hey, I just wanted to double check. This isn't an April Fool's joke, right? And I was like, nope, we actually legit do have a meeting, even though we typically don't. But I just thought, like, did he sit on that all day long and just was like, or did, I don't know. I thought that was really funny. So such last second where he was like about to get in his car and he was like, I just want to make sure that when I show up, other people are also going to show up.
Are we actually doing this?
Anyways, that's random, but that was my yesterday.
We have a question for you guys. What stresses you out?
My children. I love you very much, children, but they can be stressing sometimes.
What's something they do that stresses you out? Let's talk about it.
Yeah, let's get into it. I mean, it's like the easy answer is like when I have to say to do something 1,000 times, mm-hmm. but it's not just like I had to like ask you to do it a lot. It's you looked me in the eyes, you heard me, I asked you to repeat me, and then you didn't do it. Mm. It's the process of disobedience that is stressful.
That is, I can imagine that would be stressful.
Yep. Now it's becoming, what's stressing me out is my daughter's sassy responses to everything we say.
Oh.
As a 7-year-old.
She's Abby, an attitude.
Abby, dude, and Abby the other day in bed was like, she's not even 12 yet.
Yeah. Because how long do you think that lasts?
Forever.
You think?
There's aspects of it that there's who she is. Because
I feel like...
Because here's what it is. It's she doesn't know she's being... Sometimes she knows she's being sassy. Yeah. Sometimes it's literally like she's learning how to respond.
Yeah.
So the tone for us in our interpretation is sass and disrespect.
Yeah.
She is like struggling and identifying emotionally, this is what I'm feeling, so this is how I'm going to, because there's no filter,
yeah.
express that which I either disagree with or I don't know or like what... And so it's she's learning how to respond in a way, because it's not just what you say, it's how you say it. She's a child. She doesn't know how to and doesn't need to know how to. Mm. What I need to figure out is how do I not allow that to trigger me? It's on me. It's not her.
Dude, I'm stressed listening 7. To that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't help you.
No, me either, man. Therapy. Best of luck.
Therapy solved.
Best of luck. All right, Emily, what stresses you out?
For me, it's when like I have a plan. But my plan rests on things that I don't have control of. Mm. And then those things start feeling like they're out of control, but I will never be able to control them. But the plan just starts feeling like it's failing. Mm-hmm. And then I just go into like thinking about every single thing that I could do to fix it. When in reality, I actually can't fix anything. Mm. So just like the endless spiral of not having control.
That's real.
I that's why I don't make plans.
What stresses me out, and this is the stupid one I can think of, is eating all the food in my fridge before it expires. Do you guys ever feel that?
No, never.
Never? Mm-mm. Like sometimes I see stuff and I checked it, like the milk in our fridge. And yeah, I know I say milk with an E. I know it's milk with an I, but this is how I say it. Talk about sass. But the milk, ah, now I'm in my head. It's in the fridge and it had a date on it. And I was just like, there's no way I'm going to drink all that milk before the date.
Yeah.
And now I should never, ever stress about the milk in the fridge, but right. I do. Or the eggs, man. Like, how am I going to eat all those before the date?
Yeah.
And then when you throw something away, I just feel like it's so wasteful. I wasted money. I wasted food. I could have eaten that. I probably would have enjoyed eating that. And I didn't get to it, man. So that and houseplants. I'm on my second ever houseplant. The first one I killed. And this one's, I don't know when to water them.
Each plant's different.
Dude, it said when the first 2 to 3 inches of the soil is dry, the top two. I don't know. That's first of all, I don't know what 2 to 3 inches is. Like, so then, you know, like, then it's like, what's dry? Like, when I put my finger in the plant, like, it's kind of dry. I don't know, dude. I want so bad to have something green and alive in my house, but it just brings me so much stress.
Because you think you have to do it right, and there's a right way to do something.
There is a right way to care for this plant.
Yeah.
The last one died.
Yeah, if it dies, it's okay.
I overwatered it so bad. It started getting this weird mold on top, and then I was like, I can't have this in the house.
You tried. I'm proud of you for trying again.
Usually, like, once a week is good for a house plant.
Depends on the plant. That's all I'm going to say. Depends on the plant. Depends on the plant. My wife has gotten really into this stuff.
Okay.
We have way too much green stuff around our house. So you can ask her.
Okay.
This plant looks great.
Are we really 6 minutes in?
Yep.
Oh, man. Let's get going. Wow. Sorry, that's on me. That's on me. I'll take that.
Well, we are talking about conflict today.
Here's why. Here's why we had that. Here's why we talked about stress. The reality is in conflict, right? Because conflict is, right, what's the phrase? Conflict's the price you pay for intimacy. Yes. You're rubbing shoulders with people. If you're close to people, you will in your life experience conflict. And conflict is hard and frustrating because it has us experience stress. And not all stressful things are bad. And so it's how do we navigate that, which is stressful.
Yep.
And conflict tends to stress us out a lot, which is okay. It's just how do we navigate that. Yep.
So we care about conflict because there's a cost when it's not handled well.
Yeah.
Like I've personally lost friendships over not handling conflict well. But I've also seen like when I do handle it well,
that's good.
I've often found my friendships strengthened and my relationships better from it.
Yeah.
And so what's like the end goal in navigating conflict?
I would say, unity, but also just peace. Because when you know conflict needs to happen, there's something in us that will not move on until that conflict happens. You will either push so far away from it, you'll separate from a relationship, or like what Ben says, like that conflict, he doesn't say it, but he said it in this, right? Like that conflict is the price you pay for intimacy. So then when you don't do conflict, you lose intimacy. And so there will be a relational gap. You see that thing that person does. You have that disagreement. You have that thing you know you need to say, but you're not saying it. And so you, by nature, start to drift towards other people and away from them. And so that happens. Or like just peace in relationship. If they're mad at you and you don't do conflict, they're not going to have peace.
Yeah.
And so, it's unity that we would be one, but it's unity for the sake of peace too, that we would together have peace in the way that God designed us to experience it.
Aaron, our leader.
Who?
Pastor Aaron here at Grace Point
Just
Church.
Just kidding. I love you, Aaron. Our lead pastor.
He says the most effective people are those who can disagree constructively, not destructively. And keep difficult conversations substantive and not personal. And so it's like, it's, yes, peace, but also in the midst of having to navigate conflict, because you're going to have to figure out how to do it, it's peace, unity. It's the aspect of unity is you get to be effective in that relationship or in work. You're going to have conflict in work. Because sometimes it's not just a relational issue. It's a task thing. It's a priority thing. It's a goal thing where there's just disagreement. Yeah. And all of a sudden there's tension. And when tension rises and not addressed, eventually it potentially turns into conflict. Yeah. So it's like to be effective just in relationship and life. Like you need to do this well.
That's good.
So in approaching conflict, there's usually two different types of personalities that kind of just swing on the pendulum. Mm-hmm. And so this first one is people that are conflict avoiders. Mm-hmm. And I am one of them. I'm probably the team captain of the conflict avoiders.
Team captain. She's got the whole jersey, the kit and the caboodle. You guys heard that saying?
No. Yep. I have heard it.
That's good. The whole kit and caboodle.
But if you're anything like me, these are people that often will minimize offenses or things that happen and say, well, it's not a big deal. I'll just not address it. But what usually happens is that over time, by not addressing these things, you're actually building resentment and bitterness towards another person, or you're just holding on to acts that are really just taking away your joy and your peace that could easily be solved. Mm-hmm. So what advice would be helpful to a person who has those tendencies?
Yeah. Your voice matters a ton and your feelings matter, as I've had to learn to navigate with my wife, because she tends to lean towards avoidance a little bit too. And so some of that is just not feeling like her feelings are adequate or are important enough to actually address it when they actually are, would be the, like, your feelings do matter and are important.
Yeah. And I think trying to encourage that person that the conflict is important. Because even, I mean, I think I have conversations where people say, well, it's just not worth it to phase in. Because it's not that it's not worth it to them, or not that maybe for this person it's not, their opinion doesn't matter. They know it matters, but they don't think the strife or the struggle or the energy input into that conversation is worth the resolution on the other side. And I'm going to tell you it is. Right? It's going to cost something from you. You're going to have to put in some effort, and there might be a little bit of just like difficulty and awkwardness as you navigate it. But on the other side of that, there's something for you. Yeah, and so it is worth the cost of doing conflict.
I think if you're anything like me, like the hardest hurdle you think about is just trying to even set up the conversation or showing up to the conversation. But then it's like that conversation is actually happening. And then if you're an avoider, like you really have to watch your tongue, because chances are you've built up a lot of bitterness and resentment by avoiding. And so really just in that conversation, think twice before you speak. Speak with how like you feel, not blaming someone else, but just sharing like, this is how I feel.
Yeah.
And this is what I observe. Speaking without resentment and choosing to speak into truth still.
As a couple people at the table who aren't necessarily avoiders, what's helpful to lead you in conflict then?
I think it's making a space for me to fail in that. Because I will tell you, I am very bad at not speaking. I'm very good at speaking out of resentment and bitterness in those situations. And so sometimes I just need extra time to just sit there and like literally sit in silence for 15 seconds before I respond.
Yeah.
And I also just need the grace to know that I'm probably going to fail in saying that.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
That's so good.
I mean, on the other side of it, I also need that grace. I need double portions of that grace because I don't always sit and think and then respond. Yep. So I get myself in trouble that way.
Agreed. Same.
But I think one of the things for avoidance is even just trying to figure out what's worth it, right? I'm telling you, conflict is worth it, but there are things that aren't worth doing conflict over. And so let's quote Aaron twice in one podcast. We got to get a button. Pastor Aaron says.
We need to get a button board here, please.
Yeah, so we need to do it. But he says, if it annoys you, then you need to address it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not willing to address it, you need to allow it.
Yep.
And I think that's like, if it's annoying you consistently, if someone does something and you're like, you can shake it off, it's probably not worth doing conflict
that's
over.
Good.
Right? They said that thing and it probably rubbed you the wrong way, but tomorrow you're not going to think about it. Let it go. Let it be just, what's the phrase? Like breeze off the back or... I
like breeze off the back.
I don't think that's the right saying.
I think that's what it is.
I'm half quoting everything today. But like if it keeps annoying you, it won't go away. Every time you see that person, every time you think about that person, every time you're in that space, you feel that, then you have to address it. Mm-hmm. And if you're not willing to address it, you're saying that's okay and you're allowing it. Those are the options.
Yep.
That's the only thing on the table.
Yeah. Also, if it's not constructive. Like I think he said that before too, where it's not constructive, or there's also like moments where you have other higher priority conflicts that you need to address too, and trying to navigate 1,000 different conflicts, like start one at a time, resolve,
go to the next one.
So there's aspects of avoiding that you need to come back to. There's aspects of avoiding where this actually isn't that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Time will tell you that
for
sure. And then there's like, sometimes it's not constructive where that's usually, you have to discern that well. I try to discern that well with community and not allowing it to be like I'm inviting someone to get on my side in this versus just like, man, is this actually a constructive thing to pursue? That's hard. That's the hard discerning moment of if avoiding is okay.
And I think that's a good spot to jump in because this whole conflict hinges on the idea that you're going to do, this whole conversation hinges on the idea that you're going to do conflict with someone who also is willing to do conflict.
Yeah, that's good.
Because if it's never going to be constructive, if you walk into a room and you're willing to do conflict, but they're not, right? You're just going to beat up against a brick wall and you're going to walk away feeling not great about it. And so you can't always gauge that until you've wandered in, which is sometimes the hard part. Mm-hmm. You might think someone's ready to do conflict and then all of a sudden very quickly into the conversation, you're going to find out that they're not. And then you have to like wield yourself back and find out and protect yourself and put up some boundaries there. But I mean, it takes two to tango, right?
Yeah.
You're on, keep it going, today. Dude. I'm going to get as many of these in this podcast as I can.
I like it.
It takes two people to do conflict.
Yeah.
And so if you are willing and able and you come in there and you do conflict perfectly, but that person has a hard heart and they're not willing to go there, you're probably going to walk away not feeling the peace that you want.
That's good.
Yeah, I had a roommate. Well, I had a lot of roommates in college I didn't get along with. And I just live in a very particular way. And I know that I was to blame for a lot of it. But there was this one year where I roomed with a person who would just set alarms in the middle of the night and just hit snooze So like for hours on end, like this
for
alarm
hours, snooze for hours,
hours, hours. And so I would be losing sleep. And for months I was just like, it's not worth having the conversation.
Oh no.
Like, Brennan's on it.
Night that two.
Brennan's
the mission trip. We were on the mission trip 2 weeks ago. And the first morning, the guys in the room, there were 18 of us. There were what? 15 of us? Something like that. 15 guys in this room sleeping. Okay. And every like 6 minutes from 6 to 8 a.m. alarms went off because nobody at all coordinated. So like 6 a.m. was the first alarm and that guy snoozed it. So 6:09 and then 6:15, the next alarm went off and that guy's. So every not like 5 to 9 minutes, an alarm went off. And so the second I did one day of that. And before we went to bed the second day, I called the group guys meeting and I said, you are allowed to set your alarm at 6:30, 7, or 7:30. No other options. And they said, what about snooze? I said, no, you are a grown adult man. You can get up on your first alarm. And we did it. And I slept much better the next. I cannot believe for months you were, I would never.
Yeah.
She's an avoider, man.
Yeah, but.
That's hard though.
It was a hard year.
Sorry.
Because
sorry,
by,
Emily.
Well, by like the end of the semester, I was so sleep deprived and just so like angry. But I expected her to read my mind and to know that
that's
she was
good.
Waking me up. But she had no clue. Like yeah. She just thought I was a deep sleeper and I'm most definitely not a mm-hmm. deep sleeper. And by the time I finally had this conversation, I was so frustrated. Like we were not friends anymore. Like yeah. Still to this day. And
wow,
I learned that if you don't navigate this well, if you avoid it, like. People get hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just think about that female's husband one day. You could have saved him so much heart conflict. Why do you shake your head?
Maybe not.
Maybe. We'll see. If Emily could have stepped in, what a grace it would have been to that
maybe
future
he
man.
Says
if,
more alarms.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they'll find two perfect.
Yes,
and they're both like, you wake up at 2 a.m. to an alarm? So do I.
Yeah.
Those people are meant to be together.
But also, we don't know the other side of the story.
Yeah.
What if she was waking up every 15 minutes to pray for you?
She
was
not.
Watch your sim.
She could have been.
I'm trying to look out for all parties.
She had a very different prayer schedule than the rest of us.
She practiced unceasing prayer.
Literally.
Through the night.
But yeah, so those are our conflict avoidance people. But maybe moving on to what I call our conflict aggressors. These are people who aren't afraid to like step into the conversation. But more often than not, it's the how we step into that conversation that mm-hmm. kind of gets a little fuzzy and a little blurry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Wait, I'm going to wait.
Because
I'm trying.
This
to
is
not
the time
do,
you want to wait?
Yeah, I'm not going to try not to press into that, which I am.
I think for me, I'm between the two. And it's not because I'm perfectly balanced. It's because I do both. There are things where I find myself, I'm very avoidant, where I'll say, it's just going to be fine. I'm not going to have the conflict. I'm not going to do it. It's not going to be worth it. And it clearly is. And then there are times where I dive into conflict and I just am like, rip the Band-Aid off, mm-hmm. say the thing. And the thing that's been most helpful for me is partially just reading the room and understanding who I'm talking to. Those are huge. And that's so hard because I personally am trying to learn how to do conflict. And for me to do conflict, it's different than with Ben than it is with Emily.
Yep.
And it's different with you two than it is my wife. And it's different with my wife than it is my family and my friend. And it's just like, that's some of the nuance of conflict is I'm trying to learn how I communicate
yep.
and how I function.
Yeah.
And just when I think I'm doing a good job, I show up and I bring myself to a person who's not ready for all of Brennan.
Yep.
And then those two things butt up. And so, yeah, just being really sensitive, I think is a good word here. Sensitive, not in a bad sense, but just like, are you sensitive to the room and the people
yeah.
trying to be gentle like Paul commands in Philippians 4?
Yep. Yeah, I agree. As an aggressor, I tend to be more concerned with the result of needing to fix the thing and not concerned for the person at all. So I attack, I escalate, I cut off. I, in the midst of that, even as an aggressor, like I'll cut off. And my motive behind some of the cut off in conflict is I'm trying to discern what you're saying, but then I completely dismiss.
Yeah.
I've not cared about you and what you're saying. I'm caring about, I need to understand so I can fix the problem.
Yeah, you're trying to bring clarity.
Trying to get
you're
clarity,
trying to be
which
helpful.
That's not bad. That's not a bad thing, yeah. But I completely dismiss the person. So as an aggressor, that's where the starting fire thing happened because I only care about the situation, the context, what needs to be fixed. Zero concern for the person, which is what I have to recognize and yeah. know.
So then how do you do that on the other end of like, how do you step into a room caring more for the person than for the resolution?
I have to constantly tell myself not to interrupt. Mm. Like, so starting there, I have to know the right motive of why I'm entering into the conflict. Like, why do I actually want to step into this? Is it unity and be at peace with one another as much as it is with you? Or is it just to fix a problem that I think is a problem? Sometimes that's okay.
Yeah.
As long as I'm being insanely like aware that I am not dismissing the person.
Yeah.
So I actually care for them. Mm. So it's where the other side, like for Abby, I think she has to know as an avoider that I care for her as a person, that like I am for her. And on the other side for me is like, I have to show that I actually care and for her.
Yeah.
Because as an aggressor, I just want results, man. Mm-hmm. I just like, conflict's not bad. I hate it still. Like, I struggle if people say I really love conflict. Like, why?
No.
I'm not afraid of it. I don't love it, man.
No.
Even as an aggressor, like, it's hard. I'm not afraid to step into it. It's crazy difficult.
And it's taxing.
Yes.
Right? I don't think I've ever left even a really like healthy conflict conversation. I don't leave thinking, you know what? That was refreshing. Can't wait till we do that again. I leave thinking, oh man, that took some effort. It took some work. It took a lot of prayer.
Yeah.
And then I leave thinking, yeah, I have peace and I'm glad we did that. But it's always been taxing for me.
Yeah. There's been moments, even in the last month, that me and Abby have had conflict and it's been good.
Okay. Yeah.
So I've felt it's very rare where it's like, I'm peace, but I don't want to do that again. Or that's where it usually feels.
Yeah.
I've had some moments the last month where it's like, well, we stopped and we got done with it. I was like, this was good. And she goes, yeah. So she didn't have that same feeling.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, this was good. So it's rare. Mm-hmm. It's possible.
When I think part of it is then when you're in that aggressive place or like when you tend towards that aggressive piece is just not only understanding them and leaving them room to speak and, but like, yeah, caring, like just like you said, caring for their best too. Yeah. And that's just what love is. That's what, I mean, we will always like, I think, I don't know where you stole it from, but somewhere where it was like, love is wanting God's best for people. And if we have that kind of mentality when we step into conflict, then it will tailor both our avoidance and our aggressive sides into what does it look like to glorify God in the way that I have this conversation.
Mm-hmm, that's good.
I think I just go back to Jesus. Like, he's about to be arrested. He's walking into Jerusalem and he starts flipping over tables. Mm. And I think when I hear people talk about conflict, they're like, well, Jesus flipped over tables too.
Yeah.
It's like, and then Jesus went on the cross for them because he loved them and made a way for them. And so I think conflict is like navigating both. Like, yeah, you're allowed to be angry. You're allowed to be frustrated, but that always has to lead you into loving the other person as well.
And I have big pet peeves with people who abuse that piece of text because it's just it. They'll take their unrighteous anger and they'll justify it by Jesus's righteous action.
Yeah.
But when you see that he comes on the triumphal entry, this huge moment of just ecstasy and crowds and people, and he rides in and he sees his father's house that is the temple, and it's being desecrated for all kinds of reasons. And it says, what did he do? He left. He left. He went. He made the whip. He had this retreating period, and then he came back. Jesus didn't just flip a switch, blow up, flip tables. No. He went away and he made a calculated decision of this is what it looks like to righteously live in this space.
Yeah.
And like, if you thought about how we often handle anger, how often do you have the thing that sparks you, have the thing that really just like gets under your skin? You take a period to go away, to pray, to be with God, to find discernment, and then you return back to that. Oftentimes you're not flipping tables.
Yeah.
Right, but Jesus, that's his righteous, it's patient anger. It's just, when you have conflict, you know you have to do it, but have you given yourself the space to ask God, what does it look like to carry this out? And I don't think it's going to look like you flipping tables.
Yeah, that's good. That's real good.
So when we look at how we actually engage in this conversation, what are some steps or some tips that we should follow?
I'd say first be prayerful in yourself. Ask the Lord, is this something that I need to address? And if not, then let it go. Learn to let it go. And if it is, then ask God for boldness. Ask him for courage, because we know that this is something that takes boldness and courage. Ask him for gentleness. He will provide the things that you ask him. Ask him for clarity in your words. Ask him for wisdom in what you might say. Ask him that he would soften the other person's heart to the words you're about to say. But I also would add the caveat that I'm learning that when I do Christian conflict with other people who also love Jesus, I want them to have space to pray before we have the conflict too. Because oftentimes conflict is not entirely one-sided. You both are feeling something. And so before, if I have the chance to pray, prepare my heart and know what I want to say, I think they should also have the privilege to do that. So when you're setting up that conversation saying, hey, there's some things that I want to talk about. I think it could be a little bit difficult. We need to do some conflict. I would encourage you to pray before we meet tomorrow at 3. I think that's a really kind offer to someone, you know, and like, there's some people who will really struggle with the angst and the anxiety in that, I'm sure.
Yep.
But either that or like blindside them, I'd rather lend them the option to have the time to pray and to process. But then again, it could be different. Part of that should just be discerned too, I guess.
I think it should be discerned. And I think you should know the person.
Yeah.
There's aspects of knowing the person that's helpful in that. Yeah. And some of that starts with your own prayer of like, even just how should I approach
for
this?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love the idea. Yeah. Where do I need to own this? I don't know if it was who said it in whatever conflict book I read at one point, but even if it's 2% of mine to own, I need to own that and be honest about that. Yeah. So there's, and that usually comes through prayerful work. Not necessarily me just like, yep, I failed here. Especially in situations where I really didn't feel like it did, but there's always a moment in the midst of conflict where I've fallen short here in some way.
For sure.
So and then speaking that, like allowing the other person to hear, like, I own this 2% and I failed in this 2% and that's the 2% that I own.
That's good. Yeah.
The other part where it's just ask questions. When you step in, it's so easy to make assumptions and write narrative. You did this because rather than, hey, I experienced this. I felt this way. Would you tell me why you made that decision? Are like just starting to let them fill in the gaps that you and your mind will already try to fill in. Yeah. We're story writing people and there's a narrative aspect to the way that we live life. And so when something happens to you, you're filling in the backstory. They did this because they felt this way, because they said that, because, and oftentimes you do not know why they did what they did. Mm-hmm. And so ask and get some clarity, because who knows, maybe they had a bad day and you were just on the other side of that, or, you know, there's a million different reasons. Yep. So start to try to get some clarity by questions.
Yeah, by questions and repeating back.
Yeah.
That has been the number one most helpful thing for me and Abby. And our conflict is literally for me to shut up. So even when I want to, again, get the results oriented, I want to fix this problem. What's the issue? So I want to ask clarifying questions in the middle of her talking, which dismisses her as a person. It's one, I've had to learn to, if I don't remember the question by the time she's done talking, maybe it wasn't that important of a question. Legitimately, and that has come actually very true into fruition. The other is, before I even ask a question, when she's finished and able to state clearly what the issue was from her perspective, repeat back what I think she said so she can even in that give clarity on what I'm thinking. Because I most likely am interpreting what she's saying wrong. Mm-hmm. And not because I'm mean to her, just I hear words, phrases, whatever it is, like sometimes wrong. And she would admit, like sometimes she doesn't say it as clear as is in her head.
Was that awkward for you to start?
It's still awkward.
Yeah.
Oh, 1,000%.
I hear you say.
Oh, no. We're still in the midst of learning this.
Yeah.
For sure. We didn't start actually being really intentional with our communication conflict until 8 years into marriage. Don't recommend that, guys, at all. Mm. Do not recommend that. So the last 6 years have been awesome, horribly difficult in some ways, but really good. I feel like we're just in the season in the last 2 years of like, okay, I think we know how to do this, actually.
And I did a lot of like training for some of the jobs I had in college where they would teach us active listening, which is that same thing. When someone, this is what I hear you saying.
Yep.
And it just feels so cringy and so fake. Mm. And so some of that is like, once you're comfortable in relationship, like a marriage, or once you have the emotional intelligence to actually mean the thing you're saying,
that's good.
I think that's a part of it where it's like, I probably just never had the emotional EQ to be like, I hear you saying this. Is that, you know, it just felt
but
so
But even there,
terrible.
There's a motive in that when I've actually, so what you just said of meaning what I'm actually saying.
Yeah.
Some of that comes down to, am I allowing myself to actually hear opposing view and be able to receive an opposing view of what I'm feeling?
Yeah.
Like that is a massive part of it for me.
Yeah, that's good.
Because the end goal of this conversation is not that you convince someone else of your perspective. Like the end goal was always unity. Yeah. And with that, when you're having this conversation, it might end in disagreements most of the time. You might not agree on what happened or who was wrong or yada, yada, yada. But like the end goal is unity. And part of it is just saying like, can I live in unity even if I don't agree with this person's perspective? But can we make a plan moving forward? Yeah. That was one of the biggest things I had to learn last year was like I'd enter these conversations and no one would have my perspective. and was like, am I going to try and fight and convince people, or I'm going to rest and saying, all right, like they don't agree and that's okay, but we can still move forward and still try and solve things.
Yeah, that's
good. I would say the final thing that I'm thinking about here is you have to follow up with conflict often. Very rarely is it a one-time conversation that just paves over an issue and it never comes back up again. That's not how the enemy works. Like, if you are willing to do conflict, you have a really healthy disagreement. Watch in the next week. That's the place where the attack will come. That's the place where temptation is going to come back. They're going to say something. They're going to do something that's going to put you right back in that place to start the whole thing over and get you spiraling again.
Yeah.
Like, he hates when we live in unity.
Yeah.
And so when we pursue unity and we make steps of unity, he's not just like, oh, that's really, I'm glad that, I'm good for that. Yeah. You know, like, he hates that and he's going to push back against that. And so follow back up, be like, hey, I know we had this conversation. Are we doing better there? Is there clarity there? Do you feel better in this? And sometimes that's going to reopen a couple of the wounds, but you really want to make sure those are cleaned out and you're good to go there. And so I would say don't beat the bush or dude,
don't beat around the bush.
Don't beat around the bush or like, no, that's not the thing. Don't
beat a dead horse.
Don't beat a dead horse. I was merging two things, but don't beat the dead horse, right? Like, you don't need to talk about it 100 times, but you should probably bring it back up again at some time to make sure you guys are both still good.
Yeah.
Well,
don't beat a dead horse, Bush.
Yeah.
Don't.
Listen, I think you guys, everything that we said, if there's anything that you want, I want you to take away, it's this. Just breeze it off your back.
Just breeze it off your back. I'm going to go and I'm just going to like, I'm not even going to read my Bible the rest of the day. I'm just going to read different, quote, just like, different.
What are they called? We're distracting. No.
They're like, are they idioms?
I think so. Yeah.
They're just like these short quips that are not really helpful. I remember the one.
Yeah. Yep.
One day I said, it's like that egg on your face moment. And Jaina was so, if you guys know Jaina, she's the worship leader at Oasis. She was so confused on this, like, have you heard egg on your face?
No.
Oh, what? Dude. And we had like a 20-minute discussion on if that was a saying or not. And I was like, I promise
egg on your
you.
Faces, for sure.
Egg on your face is like that embarrassing moment, but it's just hilarious. These are like things people say that are not really at all helpful.
Yeah.
So I hope this podcast is breeze on your back.
I'm cutting that out.
No. All right, goodbye.